Now, the moment you've all been waiting for. It is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, so please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Courtney.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My name is Courtney. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Courtney.
My sobriety date is 5/20/15 this time. I'm grateful to be here tonight. I don't know where to start. I guess I start when I was born, right? I don't know if I was born an alcoholic, but they should have took me to an AA meeting right away. Because I was having problems, so. I wasn't raised in a good family. I suffered from Catholicism. That's a pretty rough deal to have when you're getting raised. One time I was in high school, my father yelled at me. He said, "If you don't go to church, I'm going to have to go to hell." I said, "Man, take it easy. It's all right, you know." So that was tough. From an early age, I knew when I was young, I was already selfish and self-centered. I was kind of a loner in school. I remember when at Christmas I was a kindergarten, I won a record player and I got a tow truck. And I remember being all bummed out about it, you know, like, man, that's, you know, because I wanted this record player so I could listen to the Beatles. Kindergarten, there's something wrong there. And all through school, you know, I was always getting in trouble in grammar school. I made these nuns crazy. I always got in trouble. I was always getting in trouble at school. I never could sit still. I was always jumping around, moving around, getting in trouble everywhere I went. And I'd go to school in the morning and I'd say, you know, I knew when I get home I was going to get spanked or pushed or something because of the way I acted in school. My parents would always find out. And I, when I would go to school in the morning, I would think, gosh, I gotta behave today. I gotta stop. But I couldn't stop. I was always moving around all the time, getting in trouble. Around the eighth grade is when I first took my first drink. And that was a magical, miracle thing. It was my solution. I had found a home, a friend. Alcohol made everything just right. I liked it. I liked the feeling it gave me. It's kind of like a feeling I get today, what I get today and through the steps and the solution I have. Alcohol was a solution. Now, all through my drinking, I did a whole lot of outside issues. Now, but I'm just going to talk about drinking. When I say I was drinking, believe me, and there was other stuff doing, going down for days on end. So, but I'm here for Alcoholics Anonymous. I got into high school, and my freshman year, I first annual wrestling party for Tulare Union High School, the last wrestling party that Tulare Union ever had, because I big tri-tip dinner, and I went out and drink some, you know, I wanted to fit in, and I was drinking and whiskey and stuff, and I went to this little function and started throwing up all over the place, and got in a blackout. My mother had to go get me. I was suspended from school. It was a big deal, like major suspension. Like, you just don't do this at school functions, you know. At least normal people don't, anyway. And so in high school, I got kicked out of class. I barely graduated high school. I got a nice car in high school. I was a little brat, you know. That's the selfishness and self-centeredness I had, you know. I wanted to have a nice car. I wanted to be cool, slick and cool, so I could, you know, drink and be cool and be somebody that I wasn't. So I drove a nice car in high school, and I thrashed it and everything. And I graduated from high school in 1978. And went to the coast, wrecked my car, went to jail. So I was, I never saw any problem with alcohol. I mean, it's a cultural thing, you know, it's for the drink. And people in my family drank. I had, you know, a history of alcoholism, that's for sure. My mother's mother died when she was 64. She died in DT. She used to drink a fifth of whiskey damn near every day. And she had some sisters who died like in her 40s of alcoholism. And both sides of my family, there's a lot of alcoholism. So, but drinking was a part of life. It was like what you did, you know. It was like family gatherings and everything. Life was good. So I went on, I got out of high school, and I was partying hard and doing all kinds of stuff. Went to jail when I was 23. I got a DUI over in Kings County over there. There's somebody here from Kings County, I know. I was drunk. Thunderade. Drinking Thunderade that night. That's Kool-Aid with Thunderbird wine. Yeah, I went to jail at a .17, and that was back then. I was like $300 fine and 16 hours of community service. I got a little actions. I got another DUI in Tulare, and overnight, went to jail overnight. I never went more than overnight to jail, but I got out of that one, of a jury trial, and that never stopped, you know. Nothing ever stopped me from drinking. I never thought I had a drinking problem, no way. A lot of my friends, they got married, settled down, a lot of people, but, you know, I just hang around with people who like to party, and we party for days at a time, and I got to be around 26, 27. I didn't move out of my parents' house until I was 26, you know. They're picking up my toys and changing my diapers to age. Oh, hell, even when I was 50 years old down there. Shit. Taking care of my wreckage for me. But I moved out, I got out of house, and I thought, you know what, I need to settle down. I was having a lot of, you know, you're getting wasted all the time, you get hangovers and stuff, you know, I need to settle down. Maybe get married or something. Of course, I got to go out and find one who likes to drink, too. I got a lot of drink. Hell, she could out, I met her, and she was could out-drink me. And I thought, you know what, well, since we both party hard, we could get married and kind of slow down together, kind of settle down and taper it off together and help each other be better people and not party as much, you know. Oh, yeah. She got pregnant. We got married. She stopped drinking, and I kept drinking. And I turned into a monster. I was a creature just wandering around, not coming home. And over a little over 2 years, both children were born, my son and my daughter, beautiful, healthy children. She was had induced both times. Both times I picked her up at the hospital, I was late picking her up from partying and stuff. And I just was not around, man. You know, it got to be, or I was partying and stuff, partying at the pool hall in Tulare. You end up somewhere at a hotel party, and I'm saying, man, what the hell am I doing here? I got two little children at home, you know, they're like little kids. I mean, I got pictures of me and my kids when they're all small, and I look like crap. My face is red, just a mess. But I'd be out partying. I'd say, what am I doing? What the hell am I doing out here? I couldn't understand. I couldn't figure out why, what, how am I going to stop this? I remember one night being at a hotel a couple blocks from where I live, and I was partying with some guys. The sun was coming up. I'm thinking, God, looking out the window, I said, what is up with it? Why can't I, what? And I swear I'd wake up in the morning, I said, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do this tonight. I'm going to come straight home. Come 4 or 5 o'clock, I'll just drink 2 beers, right? And it never was 2 beers. Off I'd be again. 3 or 4 in the morning, every night. And I couldn't stop. I just couldn't figure out what the hell I was doing. My father-in-law was dying from this disease, and it was 1990. It was a few days before Christmas time. He turned gray and yellow. He was dying. His pleurisy hospital. I live about a block and a half from the hospital, and I went to see him. And I just, you know, I don't know. I just want to drink. He was in there dying, And I was sitting there one night, and my wife wanted to go see her father in the hospital, just right down the street, a few days before Christmas, 1990. And I told her, you know, you ain't going to the hospital. I'm not staying here with these kids. You're not going to go see your dad. You're not going. And that's the kind of selfish, self-centered, sorry-ass human being I'd become. She didn't go. She probably went the next day or something, but and he died on a couple days later. And I kept drinking. A few months after that, she left me. How could that happen? Why would she do that? I was out there one night before, and she would, at times she told me she would leave the two kids at home sleeping, little children, small, age of 2 and 6 months, while she wanted to drive around town looking for me. But, yeah, she left, so I said, all right, that's great, I can party some more and stuff. So anyway, I started partying hard, and the divorce was going through, and then Christmas Day 1991, I walked into Mill Creek Psychiatric Hospital. I heard something about AA. I knew some, had some friends in AA, but I didn't know too much about it. But I was introduced to AA in there, and I got out of there after 13 days, started doing aftercare, and I started going to AA meetings. I started meeting lifelong friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hung around here for 9 years, just sober, not drinking. I didn't get a sponsor. I went to a lot. I let a lot of people believe I had a sponsor. A secretary meeting, H&I, the GSR, CSR. I went to 2 World International AA conferences in San Diego and Minneapolis. I went to the AA conference all over. I had a good time. I laughed. You can ask Grass. We laughed a bunch of times, but I had him fooled. Pretty good. But we made friends even after that. I didn't have the inside job you got to have here. I didn't clean up any of the records of the past. I had some type of a spiritual program. I prayed, you know, every morning, and I had books that I read every morning. I did that. But that's just one small part of this program. You know, that's maybe a third step or something, part of a third step or second step. I didn't go through the thorough house cleaning. I didn't look at the causes and conditions of my drinking. I didn't write down all the people. I did a four step. I kind of did like an autobiography type deal, you know, nothing like it's in the book. I share it with myself and myself, and that don't work. I didn't get honest with nothing. And for me, over a period of time, things get, you just don't, there's nothing happening. And I would think about that. I hadn't done that stuff. And so, you know, after a period, you know, we talk about fears and resentments in this program, and I still had all that stuff deep inside me, and I tried to push it down by going to meetings and hanging around with AA people, but deep down inside, I was turning dark, black, blacker and darker my life was, and I decided, you know what, maybe if I get married again, that'll make me feel better. Yeah. A couple of days after I got married, I was down in Mexico, and I started going to pharmacies and things, and I started doing popping pills for about 4 years, and the marriage didn't last too long, about 9 months, and that started my 14 years. That was 14 years of being out there, and after a time, I didn't think I was that bad. I wasn't drinking, and then I started drinking, and I didn't think I was, still didn't think I was that bad. And I was still going to a few meetings here and there, but what a false, fake dude I was, you know. And I started going deeper and deeper in disease. I started drinking a lot, and I didn't think I was that bad. And after a while, I still didn't think I was that bad. And a little while longer, I said, no, I'm not as bad as I used to be yet. Then I started hanging around lower companionship, not sleeping for days at a time. And I ended up in the hospital a few times, emergency room 3 or 4 times, by ambulance and driving myself. And I didn't think, you know, there was nothing wrong. I didn't know what the hell I was thinking. But I had, my best friend was alcohol and other things, you know. I couldn't give that up. And it got to be the last few years, from like 2013 to 2015, it was like a mess, you know. I just couldn't figure out. And I'd be partying with friends late at night. I'd break out my big book. I'd say, hey, this is where it's at, you guys. This is where it's at. It sucks over here. This sucks. It's way better over there where I used to be. Yeah, it's funny, but it was. Okay, but I talk about the terror, four hideous horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. Now, when you're up 4 o'clock in the morning, you're just getting it on, man. I don't know about you guys. Are you guys having a good time? No. I wasn't having a good time anymore. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. That was an understatement for me. I had contacts with people in the program here and there. I'd see grass every once in a while and talk to them about going somewhere or something, but I was just carrying on a conversation. I wasn't ready. I had no idea at times. I wanted to stop, but I didn't know how. I didn't know how I was going to do that. I thought it was going to just have to end. I was going to just die in my house or something. Because as sure as I'm sitting here right now, I knew for sure I could not stop. It was just, how could I live? How could I get by, get through a day without alcohol and other things? I didn't know. I had no, I could not figure that out. So anyway, I went to Laughlin back in May of 2015. There was an AA conference going on over there. A lot of friends. I thought, this is it. I'm going to get sober over there at this conference. And no, I didn't. I partied for 7 days straight. And I drove to Las Vegas, and I was running out of money and ran out of everything. And I got a couple of drinks in a casino. They sucked. They're watery and shit. I said, gosh, damn it. This is where I'm going to end it. So I started looking for meetings to go to. I went to my room. I crashed. And the next morning, I thought, you know what? Maybe this is it. So I looked up a meeting. I went to a meeting in Las Vegas that night on 5/20, a Wednesday night. The Cold Nickel meeting at 2000 Maryland Parkway in Las Vegas. And I heard some stuff that night. When I left there, I was speeding through the streets of Las Vegas. I was so fired up. Some guy there was talking about his higher power when he first came in was like Buddha, Jesus, and a picture of Bill W. and Bob on a dresser. He's talking about his higher power. I said, I started driving back to Tulare, and I don't know. I was done. I don't know. I thought I was going to be sleepy for like a week or something, but I don't know. I just came back to Tulare, and I talked to Grass and a few other people, and I went to a meeting on Friday night at the Christ Lutheran, and I saw friends there I hadn't seen in a long time. And they were my friends still. I had resentments. There were some people I wanted to just beat the shit. I wanted to punch them out and stuff. But I didn't care. I went and hugged them all, man. I didn't care. I was so grateful. I met Kurt there that night. He was leaving the meeting. I was trying to keep up with him. Hey, come on. Hey, man. What's your name? He thought I was some dumb newcomer. I was. So was. I was following him. Anyway. He gave me his name, but I don't know. I have to talk about the, you know, I got a sponsor. I was appointed one, and I got a sponsor. Thank God that he did the steps, and he sponsored people when he talked about the steps. And I started cleaning up the records of the past. I did a four-step, and so the first step I did with him, and it's basically, you know, I was powerless over alcohol. My life was unmanageable. It was a mess. I could not work. I was a lousy-ass husband. I mean, I wasn't a husband. That's right. I was divorced. I couldn't be a husband or nothing. I couldn't be a father, a son, an employee, a friend, anybody. My life was messed up. Power greater than myself, I found, restored me to sanity. I believe in that power, and I believe it's God, in my understanding. I choose to call God. I'm only talking about a higher power. You can call whatever you want. I say, but God is for me. God's in this dang book so much, I don't know. It's got to be up there somewhere. If you got a problem with God, stare up in the stars on a clear night, look up there and say, whoa. Look at him. How did they get up there? I swear to God, I mean, just, you know, don't be thinking too much, but I believe there's a God, and that He has saved my ass. I turn my life on a will over care of God on a daily basis. I got to. I made a searching and fearless moral inventory. I wrote down all that stuff, all the people, all the resentments, all the people I hurt, the two wives, the other women, the other people I hated and I didn't like them. And the people who loved me the most, my family, that's who I hurt the most. I had to write them down. I shared these things with a sponsor. And I didn't have a sponsor before, and I believe that's the person you got to get somebody. If you're looking for a sponsor, find someone who's done the steps to sponsor people. Step 6 and 7, we ask God to remove these defects of character, and we humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. I don't know, those two steps are about the same to me. I don't know, I guess shortcomings and defects of character are similar. I got to ask God to remove those every day, because they do come back up. I'm a human being, but I have a lot of defects of character, probably some that nobody else has. But I have them, and those things cause me lots of problems. Those defects of character are the opposite of moral character, my moral beliefs that I believe what right is right, the living the right life. And I did the opposite of those things. I was not the kind of human being I wanted to be. I made a list of all persons with harm, and I became willing to make amends to them all. That was in my fourth step. And I had a list, and it was, like I said, people I had harmed. And because of the defects of character I had, I lashed out at people from fear and resentments. I made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when do so to injure them or others. I made amends to the wives. I just did the second wife a few weeks, about a month ago, and it was wonderful. It was great healing. I mean, it's the only way. The steps are in order, you know. It's 1 through 12, and 9 is very important to clear up your conscience. To get that out of that deep, that dark stuff, to get rid of it, be done with it. And so not to do those same things again to people. Do unto others as you want done unto you. That's what I'm learning here. I continue to take personal inventory, and when I promptly do it, I promptly admitted it. And I don't always do that. Every day at night, I have to have a reminder. I got a little thing in my cell phone, goes off about 9 o'clock, says, thank you, God. 9:30, thank you, God. Beep, beep, beep. Because I kind of need that, because I forget, thank God, and look at myself, what I've done today. I don't let myself get in a situation where I'm going to have to go out and make amends to people, because I don't like it. And it don't feel good. And the words that we say, people we talk to me, for me, my opinion is that the words of my mouth cause more problem than punching somebody out. Words hurt. And those kinds of things, I try to keep my mouth shut. I've learned that in the last couple of years, that I don't want to be treated the way I want. I want to be treated, you know, like I should be treated others. I got to do right. Be kind. And I sought through prayer and meditation to prove our conscience conduct with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Every morning, I got to pray. I need to pray every morning. I don't do it every morning. I did the first year or so, but every once in a while I get sidetracked. And I might miss one day in a couple weeks or something. But I pray every day. I ask God for guidance to show me what Your will is for me today. Relieve me of the bondage of self. I say the third step prayer. It's in the big book. I say the seventh step prayer. It's in the big book. Very big time prayers. I think they're meant for alcoholics. Take away my difficulties. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Defects of character. I ask God, please don't let me have any defects of character today. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Let every word, thought, and action come from You, God, today. Everything I do and say, I want God to help me, because I start talking. I need all the help I can get, and I got to have faith in a higher power that He's going to help me, whatever I'm doing. I must constantly ask God, when things pop up, these character defects, selfishness, dishonesty, resentments, and fears, those come up throughout the day, and I have to ask God to remove them at once. And if that ain't working, I better get to a meeting or call somebody, call a sponsor, call somebody. Because those types of things stay in my mind for a period of time. I'll be thinking about drinking. I may not think about drinking for a while, but just the sickness of it, of having those things inside of me, inside my mind, will make me sicker and sicker, and I take the walk back to the drink. I must stay in contact with alcoholics. You guys are my peeps, my people. We all speak the same language. There's a book called This Language. The book's called Language of the Heart. It's an AA book. We speak the same way. We share our experience, strength, and hope with each other. On a personal basis, one-on-one, or with two or three or more gathered in the meetings. We share this stuff. We talk about what it was like out there. The pain and the difficulties we had when we're drinking and when we're sober. We keep talking about the stuff going on and staying honest with each other about what's really going on. And I need to do that. Because I'll shuck and jive. If I got something going on in my life, you know, I ain't gonna talk about it. Nobody needs to know. I'm sneaking around doing something, maybe. Checking out this chick over here on this one street over here. I have character defects. Sorry about that, but I had to get honest with you. So I have to continue to stay in constant contact with God, because I can go astray. I haven't had much luck sponsoring people in this program. If anyone takes a chance on me, give me a try. I'm not going to waste no time with you. I'm not going to loan you no money either. Unless you can prove to me you're starving. Then I might give you some food. But this big book we have, the 12 Steps, and it's what it's all about. These 12 Steps were written, were divinely inspired by my God. Alcoholics were just tearing up stuff all over the world for a long time, causing a lot of problems, death and misery for others. And my God got something going on down here. And I said, you know, let's get something going down there. And two guys met back in the 30s, and how it happened, if you read the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, how this program came together is just simply a miracle. It is a miracle. I am a miracle here today. I believe. I think the miracles we have here in these rooms, it's the same as the guy, the blind man back in the Bible giving his eyesight back. It's the same darn damn thing. Darn thing. I am a miracle. For me not to be drinking today is like unbelievable. For me to be standing up here is unbelievable. I am very grateful to be sober today. I want to thank Bill Hatzman, the alcoholic, for asking me to do this. And if you're new, welcome. Stay here. Go to some meetings. Talk to another alcoholic. Talk about what's going on with you. Where you are at. Fine. Let's go to meetings. You hear somebody what they got to say, maybe go talk to them after the meeting. If you hear something you understand that you can relate to, go talk to somebody about that. Start talking. Start asking questions. If you don't want to be out there anymore, if you're sick and tired, man, sick and tired, this is the place to be. Thank you.